call the meeting back to order. Sorry for the delay. And here I am, not ready to read this agenda item. We have reached number 9, 2013 to 2014 sport fishing rule proposals. This is a briefing. Craig Burley, welcome. What do you have for us?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. For the record, Craig Burley. I'm the Fish Management Division Manager in the Fish Program. And today I will present the briefing on sport fishing regulation proposals for the 2013-2014 season. And what I will do today is talk briefly about the criteria and the process that we used this year, talk about the timeline and public involvement for that process. I'll step through the regulation proposals that we have out for public comment and further consideration, and then end with discussion. So this year is the first year that we've used an online process for not only soliciting the public comment, but also for solicitation of proposals. At the same time, we did allow the public to submit proposals in written form if they did not have access to an online system, but by and large, the proposals that we received were through our online system. We accepted proposals from the public that addressed critical conservation need as well as recreational opportunity that would generate revenue. What we received was about 300 proposals from the public. As you recall, this is the first year in several years where we've solicited proposals from the public, so we got a pretty good response. Staff looked at those proposals and determined that there were 69 proposals that we recommended go forward for further consideration. Again, those proposals were solicited during April through June 15. We met with the Commission's Fish Committee in July and September, and those proposals then were submitted online to the public in September, and that written comment period extends through January 29. On our web page, you can see that we have not only the 69 proposals that we're recommending for further consideration, but we also have listed all proposals that we recommended not continue to go forward for public consideration. So for the first time, public has been able to see all proposals that were received through that solicitation process. October and November, we had conducted six public meetings throughout the state in our regions, and today I'm here at the first of a series of meetings where I'm briefing you on the proposals. At the February 8-9 Commission meeting, you will hear a summary from staff regarding the proposals, the comments that we received in writing from the public, as well as you'll hear public testimony at the meeting. And then between February and March, staff will review all the public comment that's received. We'll meet with the Fish Committee. We'll develop final recommendations for your consideration and action at the March 1-2 meeting. And these regulations would take effect May 1. I've grouped the rules into geographic categories to walk through for this presentation, and we'll start with the statewide rules. The first rule is a proposal to remove internal combustion motors. This is primarily on small streams. Back in 2010, our selective gear rule definition included a prohibition of internal combustion motors. Prior to that time, selective gear rules had been primarily used to create quality fishing experiences in lowland lakes. Through time, though, that rule had been used more and more as also a way to reduce hooking handling mortality and provide conservation benefits. So at that time in 2010, we revised that definition of selective gear rules, and we removed the internal combustion motors prohibited language. As a result, that created additional language in our pamphlets. Now we had to identify selective gear rules as well as internal combustion motors prohibited. Staff have identified 52 streams or stream sections where this is not required, and we're proposing to remove that requirement to simplify the language and reduce the pamphlet size. Those 52 areas are in your notebook material and listed by location so that you can see exactly which stream or section that we're proposing. Also in this proposal package, we have recommendations for technical fixes to the Washington Administrative Code. They reflect rules that the Commission has adopted previously, but there are errors in the WAC language, so we're proposing to address those via this technical fix. We also have some rule proposals that clarify ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, requirements at specific sites. It has to do with language about the type of permit or documentation that's required by the disabled anglers. And then finally, there's a few areas where we have spelling errors or a date maybe off a day or two in the WAC language. We're trying to correct those. We have those also listed in your notebook as well. The next proposal is regarding resident trout streams, and this is a proposal to open a number of streams earlier than the current first Saturday in June, to open those the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. The department recommended this, and the commission adopted a similar strategy in Northeast Washington a few years ago, and this is an expansion of that effort, and we've identified about 100 streams that are typically above anadromous barriers or in areas where there are no anadromous fish present. So we can open those streams earlier and provide additional opportunity. We have a proposal in the package that would close fishing for six-gill, seven-gill, and thresher shark statewide. This is a precautionary measure. The department currently lacks detailed information regarding the status of these populations. We do have some concerns, however. These species use our Washington coastal estuaries as nursing grounds. Given their life history, they're very slow-growing and have a relatively low fecundity. We believe that they're highly susceptible to overfishing, and so this would be a precautionary approach to closing that fishery. We currently do have six-gill closure in Puget Sound, so this would be an expansion for that species. Next, we have a proposal to increase two-pole fishing opportunity on a number of our lakes in Washington. When this legislation was passed and the department implemented this regulation a number of years ago, we did not implement this rule on quality waters. Since then, however, we've heard from the public that there's a desire to be able to use two poles in some of these waters, and we believe this has some merit and are proposing on 51 of our quality waters to allow the use of two poles, and these also are listed in your notebook as well by lake. We have a regulation proposal in our package regarding white sturgeon fishing in the state, and we currently have four options. One would be to consider time and area reductions to reduce harvest of white sturgeon. We have a proposal to consider a catch and release only fishery or no retention for white sturgeon in the state. There's an option to reduce the annual limit, as well as an option to address terminal gear rules. And these options are in place to address what we see as continued decline of the numbers of white sturgeon that are Columbia River origin. We do know that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife took action on December 7th to implement a one fish annual limit in Oregon's waters, as well as a reduced harvest for sturgeon in the lower Columbia and their coastal fisheries. And we know that the Oregon Commission took action to propose or to adopt a rule to implement catch and release fishing in Oregon waters in 2014.
Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. I noticed in this item it actually has a two fish annual bag limit.
Could you pull your mic a little bit closer?
I noticed in the last line of the explanation, it says the annual bag limit to two fish effectively January 1. That is one, isn't it? Is that an error?
Commissioner Schmitten, these options were developed and submitted for public comment in September, and based on public meetings that were held leading up to that time period, a two fish annual limit was something that was proposed for public comment. The commission has the latitude to, within this rule, modify the number of sturgeon that could be considered on an annual limit. So this is accurate based on the time it was submitted, but the commission has flexibility within that area.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Craig, I had some constituents in my area inform me that they had sent some written documentation to the department on behalf of this, on this two pole and quality water. But my question is that they were talking about Pass Lake, which is a non-retention fly fishing lake near Deception Pass. Did nothing come in on that? Or do you have a perspective on it?
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. What I'm presenting today are the proposals that were submitted for public comment in September. The department's currently receiving public comment through January 29th. We will summarize the entire comment and present that in February. Between February and the March meeting is when we would make modifications based on what we hear from public comment.
Thank you.
So I'd like to move to Eastern Washington and the Columbia River region. This regulation is in Okanagan County, Washburn Island Pond. It's abuts the Colville Reservation, and the proposal here is to allow people to have an internal combustion motor on their boat but not be able to use that when fishing, and that's consistent with what the Colville regulation is. So this is an alignment. The next regulation is regarding the Snake River, and this is for hatchery summer steelhead harvest. Currently, the season there is September 1 through March 31. We're proposing to expand that season, start that from June 16 through August 31, add that additional piece of time for a three hatchery steelhead, and this is to remove hatchery steelhead from those areas and reduce that interaction between hatchery steelhead and wild steelhead. Number nine is a proposal to remove or modify the size and daily limit for bass, walleye, and channel catfish in the Columbia River and Snake River and the tributaries, and this is in waters above the, just above McNary on the Columbia. So the proposal would start above the concurrent waters with Oregon. We have the specific waters listed in your notebook. There are two options. The first option would remove the size and daily limits in its entirety for these species. Option two would implement no daily limit, however, a size of no more than 3 over 15 inches for bass, for walleye, no more than 1 over 24, and for channel catfish, maintain a no daily limit.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
On this particular, thank you.
On this particular item on Bass, I've had a number of phone calls and letters and so forth indicating that if bass, particularly well walleye, would be the same thing, are heavy predators on some of the salmon and steelhead, that why we just don't, simply don't open it up to catch as many as you can. Is there some reason to limit the catch of bass and walleye in the Columbia?
Commissioner Perry, this is the proposal that's received the most public comment so far. I believe I looked and there were approximately 250 comments received on this proposal to date. There's quite a variety of perspective on this rule. From one perspective, I should say it's somewhat polarized. From one perspective, removal of seasons and daily limits would do the most that could be done to reduce predation on those out-migrating salmonids in those corridors where they migrate. The other perspective recognizes that there is some cannibalism, if you will, by larger sized bass and walleye on their juveniles. And so from a population perspective, by removing a disproportionate amount of the larger sized fish, you could have an undesired intent. That really gets complicated because the question becomes the power of the fisheries, the recreational fisheries, to remove those fish in enough numbers to restructure the population. And assessments that the department has would indicate that there'd have to be a significant increase in recreational fishing to have that kind of a population response. So, but that's those are the two viewpoints, I'd say.
Thank you.
This regulation proposal clarifies the boundary for Burbank Slough. This is down in Walla Walla County near the Tri-Cities. And basically what this is it's clarifying that you can use a boat when fishing west of Highway 12 or in a small canal just east of the highway. So it's really a clarification. And then as you move into the Burbank Slough, you enter into the National Refuge, and then it's no fishing from a floating device. So more of a clarification. Next regulation, again, clarifies where angling on the Walla Walla River is allowed. And what this does is this clarifies that on the Walla Walla tributaries from the Touche River upstream, they're closed except for Mill Creek and the Touche River. And so by putting this into our WACs, we can also clarify that in the pamphlet and reduce some confusion and also reduce our listing of rivers in the pamphlet, making that easier to read. Next regulation is regarding internal combustion motors on the Grand Ronde River. This is to align that prohibition with the Assotin County ordinances. 13, prohibit use of internal combustion motors on Yoakum Lake and Ponderay County. It's a small lake, and again, trying to align with the county ordinance. Number 14, Leader Lake. This lake is currently on a season it's on a season. Fourth Saturday in April through September 30, we're proposing to open this year-round to provide additional opportunity. Number 15, liberalizing bag limits for walleye on Lake Roosevelt, the Spokane arm of Lake Roosevelt. You saw this regulation before you last regulation cycle. The commission did not take action last year, asked the department to go back and talk with the public more about this. We have four options that are being considered: retain the current regulation in option one, a simple straight 16 fish limit for walleye in option two, 16 fish with one over 22 in option three, and option four is no regulation on the daily or limit or size limit for walleye. Scutney Reservoir in Franklin County, this proposal is to align the daily limit of walleye potholes in Moses Lake, which would be an eight fish, one over 22. Provide some additional opportunity for walleye. They're abundant in that reservoir. During flushing, they leave the reservoir and are sort of lost in the potholes canal, so this would allow harvest on those fish before they move out of the system. North Silver Lake, this would go to a year-round fishery under this proposal. There's currently no public access or no meaningful public access, so it made sense to convert this to a year-round lake. It removes it from the pamphlet. Does provide opportunity for those that can access it for warm water fish, but we no longer stock that with trout and have not for the last several years. Touche River Hatchery Summer Steelhead Harvest. This proposal is to extend the steelhead season by 15 days into April 15 to provide some opportunity to harvest these hatchery steelhead. Extend the Okanagan River game fish season. This is to extend that portion of the fishery from August to September 15 to align it as open for salmon during that time. We'd like to have it open for game fish as well. Monument Creek, this is a creek that's a tributary to Lost Lake, where we have bull trout. The intent here is to implement selective gear rules to reduce impacts on bull trout that are hooked in that creek. On the Methow River, this proposal is to close a portion of that river earlier on September 15. It currently goes to September 30, and this is in an attempt to not exceed our incident or our take permit for wild steelhead that are in this system. Number 22, for Tukwila Lake in Kittitas County, we're proposing to remove the eastern brook trout daily limits. These are non-native species, and they have impact on the bull trout recovery in that system, so we're proposing to remove that daily limit. Number 23, this proposal, again, is to protect ESA-listed bull trout in the Ketchless Lake system. Gold Creek, Gold Pond, and the outlet channel feed into Ketchless. There's a, when the reservoir is drawn down, it creates a channel and makes it susceptible to snag or poach bull trout. So this is to close that fishing opportunity, provide protection for bull trout. This is consistent with what we've done in some of the other reservoirs in that area. 24, this is titled Prohibit the Use of Internal Combustion Motors on Two Reaches of the Yakima River. In effect, what this does is it actually opens the use of fishing from a boat from the Union Gap area up to the I-82 bridge and maintains the internal combustion motor prohibition from the I-82 bridge up to Rosa Dam. Number 25 is to implement selective gear rules on 9 streams in Region 3. This is to protect ESA-listed steelhead and bull trout, as well as West Slope cutthroat trout, and these are the 9 streams listed here. 26. You may recall that for the last couple of years, by emergency rule, the departments implemented what we call Black Friday trout fishery in southwest Washington, and this is where we closed these lakes the Monday before Thanksgiving. We stock those lakes with trout, and then we have a reopener that Friday after Thanksgiving, and this has been a real popular fishery. Gives families something to do after Thanksgiving besides shop, and we've heard some good responses to this, so we'd like to make this permanent. Number 27, this proposal is to align regulations with Oregon in the lower Columbia River between the Rocky Point, Tongue Point area up to the Oregon-Washington border during that spring Chinook time period. And what this would do is make it unlawful when fishing from a vessel that's less than 30 feet in length, which is the break point for charter boats primarily, so that if you have the smaller boats, that you can't remove those salmon, steelhead, or dolly varden from the water if there's a requirement to release that fish. We've done this the last couple of years by emergency rule.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Craig, I have a question about that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in other Puget Sound, for example, on selective fisheries, the rules say you cannot bring the fish into the boat. It doesn't say that you can't remove it from the water, because on even a 26-foot boat of any decent depth, you cannot reach down into the water to release the fish. You have to get the fish in the net and bring alongside the boat, not in the boat, but alongside the boat.
Yes, Commissioner Carpenter, that is correct. In Puget Sound, you can net the fish. You cannot bring it into the boat. On the Columbia River and in fresh waters, we make it unlawful to remove those fish from the water. So a little bit of a difference in regulation between the freshwater and Puget Sound.
I would just think consistency might be a consideration.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Yes, I had the same thought, because how do you make it work if you can't, if your boat's 27 feet, but you can't reach down to touch the fish without pulling it out of the water? I mean, I think it makes more sense to align it with our Puget Sound wording. The intent, I think it's a great one, the minimal impact to the individual who's being, you know, picked up, let's reduce that, but functionally that doesn't seem all that viable on some of the boats I've seen, which are under 30 feet. And maybe I'm just making a mountain out of a molehill.
If I may. No. I mean, you're not. I mean, not everybody's 6'5 and has arms long enough to reach the water. Some people are of shorter stature. I just would ask for some reconsideration, because I don't think that's a reasonable expectation in that fishery, Craig.
Thank you, Commissioners Carpenter and Jennings. This regulation is currently in effect in our rules. This proposal here is to clarify that it is not required for boats over 30 feet. So this regulation has been in effect for a number of years in our freshwater area, but I hear what the commission is saying, and we will definitely take that back. The next regulation is on Swift Reservoir in Skamania County. There's a salmon and steelhead reintroduction program in this system as part of the Lewis River relicensing program. This has a number of components to it. This would delay the opening to the first Saturday in June to allow juvenile salmonids an opportunity to out-migrate and be collected at the smolt collection facility there. Would also implement landlocked salmon rules with a maximum 15 inches so that we're not impacting those adult salmon. And then finally, the September 1 to November 30 time period, this would increase a daily limit of trout from the dam up to 3/8 of a mile below the Eagle Cliff Bridge. next regulation really should have probably been the technical fixes. This is changing the date of the closure on the Vancouver Lake Flushing Channel by one day. Number 30 is for Fort Borst Park Pond on Lewis, in Lewis County, and this removes the juvenile-only fishing designation. That's a water that's located in the town there in Centralia, and this would provide some additional opportunity, which is somewhat limited there, for small lake fishing for families. Lake Skaniwa, this is in Lewis County. It's in the Upper Cowlitz watershed, and there's currently a closure from March 1 to May 31 in Lake Skaniwa. This proposal would make that a year-round fishery. There is some spring Chinook opportunity up there during this time period. It would also then align with the Upper Cowlitz and Cispus Rivers. Number 32 is increasing the daily limit for kokanee on Merwin Lake to a 10-fish kokanee limit, which would not count as part of the trout daily limit. This would provide some additional opportunity, and we are exceeding our escapement needs at the hatchery, so this is something that our hatchery folks have recommended, and they think it would provide some additional opportunity. Also in the Cowlitz system, this would create a new fishery in Rainy Creek for rainbow trout, and the proposal here is that Tacoma Power would be purchasing trout that would then be adipose fin clipped and released into this area. It's at the upper end of Rife Lake, which is closed from the anadromy in that system, and it replaces opportunity for hatchery trout that had been released in the Tilton River and Skate Creeks, which are part of the anadromous fish reintroductions effort in the Cowlitz. Blue Creek, also in Cowlitz, on the Cowlitz River, there is an area that has been an ADA site. It was near the outlet structure at the hatchery. We're proposing to remove that designation as ADA only. It no longer, that site no longer meets the requirements. There has been a new area on the Cowlitz constructed for Americans with Disabilities, so this would allow others to use that area that no longer meets the intent. Cowieman River in Cowlitz County. This extends an area open to hatchery. Winter steelhead adds about 5 miles. The intent here is to increase harvest on hatchery steelhead. This is one of a number that you'll rules that you'll see that are recommendations coming from our steelhead management work group in Southwest Washington to try to reduce steelhead impacts and recover wild steelhead. Another is on the South Fork Tootle River, again opening a stretch from the mouth to 4700 bridge a little bit earlier, last Saturday in May. It normally opens the first Saturday in June, so it would open during that time period with selective gear rules to remove hatchery steelhead.
Commissioner Jennings?
The second bullet. Is it saying that it's only open from the last Saturday to the first Friday?
That's the additional opportunity.
Oh, that's the additional. Okay, so it's expanding the overall. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Similarly, on the Green River, it opens on first Saturday in June. This would open it the last Saturday in May, a little bit more time from the mouth up to just below the hatchery water intake. Clem River, this would allow retention of hatchery steelhead from the upper salmon hatchery upstream to the Kalama Falls. We're seeing that hatchery steelhead are getting above the falls into this area, and we want to provide harvest opportunity to remove them from the spawning grounds. Steelhead steelhead fishing on the White Salmon River. As you know, Condit Dam was removed from that system. There is a three-mile section that had been closed due to the removal of the dam. We're proposing to reopen that for hatchery steelhead harvest. This rule is the other part of the Rainy Creek rule I talked about, and this is relative to Skate Creek and the Tilton River. We're no longer planting hatchery trout in these systems, so we want to revert back to this, to the statewide rules for trout, 2 fish, 8-inch minimum. Moving into the Puget Sound region, this rule is to clarify when anglers can fish in beaver ponds in the Puget Sound. When we went to the stream strategy that closed streams unless opened, it created a question about when a beaver pond adjacent to a stream was open. And rather than specifically listing every beaver pond, which in many instances are not named, we're proposing general language that allows an angler to fish the beaver pond if the stream adjacent to that beaver pond is open. This is EB Lake in Snohomish County. We no longer have access to this lake. It's currently managed with a fly fishing only rules. The problem is there's no longer public access, so people go to this lake only to find out that they can't access it. The proposal here is to remove those regulations, implement the statewide rules, which was also removed from the pamphlet, which better aligns with the ability for anglers to fish there. Long Lake in Thurston County, the proposal is to go from an opening day water to a year-round fishery. We have many opening day lakes in this area here, and what this is allowing us to do is gives us more flexibility, the department, in stocking trout. We've increased the size of trout that we're stocking. It's making challenges for logistically getting these fish to lakes. By going to year-round here, we'll be able to stock these fish at different times without an expectation that necessarily we stock just before the last Saturday in April. Similarly, at Ohop Lake, a similar strategy. We want to provide fall and winter opportunity here. We're stocking larger trout at lower densities, which is more in keeping with our management strategy for year-round waters. Shady Lake in King County. We're proposing to open this stream earlier. It's current, or this lake earlier. It's currently opens June 1. We're proposing to move this to the first or the fourth Saturday in April. Provides additional opportunity in that area. This was implemented a number of years ago, the June 1 date. We think it's appropriate to switch that back to the opening day time period to allow more opportunity. We have 2 lakes in Whatcom County that have been managed to address waterfowl hunting and fishing conflicts, and this proposal is to change the date to align with the new dates for our warm water, or for our waterfowl hunting, which is January 28th, so that we don't have people fishing from floating devices when we have duck hunters in their blinds. This next regulation is regarding tributaries to Ross Lake in Whatcom County. What we're doing here is clarifying that the tributaries to Ross Lake are open, and that this is going to provide some additional opportunity. We will maintain the closure at Ruby Creek, which is a primary spawning area for the trout in the Ross Lake system. Number 48 requires a seasonal use of single-point barbless hooks in Lake Sammamish for kokanee. This would occur the January 1 through April 30, and this is designed to reduce impacts on the native kokanee in that system. There's supplementation efforts underway to try to increase kokanee population in this area. increased the daily limit on Cascade Creek for eastern brook trout. This is on Orcas Island, and we've got a well-established population of eastern brook trout. It's a small stream. The proposal here is to put a 10 eastern brook trout daily limit on this population to try to reduce the numbers and decrease competition on cutthroat trout in that system. Number 50, to increase angling opportunity on the South Fork Nooksack River. This would be South Fork and all tributaries upstream and including the Wineluck Creek. This is up in the upper watershed. It would be a fly fishing only catch and release fishery. There's quite a bit of opportunity up there. It's a remote area. We're going to try this out. We think it could be a very quality fishing type experience. Proposal 51 would open Minner Creek to trout fishing. This is in Pierce, Kitsap County. It's the first Saturday in June through October 31. We'd implement the 14-inch minimum size limit, selective gear rules, provide some opportunity in that system. The Deschutes River here in Thurston County, we're proposing the lower stretch of the river go to year-round from a season for Saturday in June through October 15th, provide some more opportunity during the fall and winter time period. Number 53, this is regarding Channel Creek in Whatcom County. This is a tributary to Baker Lake. We're proposing to have a first Saturday in June through August 30. It's currently open into September. There's a concern that we're seeing sockeye returning into this stream earlier, and we'd like to adjust this to an August 30 to protect spawning sockeye that are moving into this creek. It's a very small creek in the upper end of Baker Lake. 54 is to open a selective gear, open a fishery on the lower Skagit River. This is down at the mouth, from the mouth to Highway 536 bridge, March 1 to May 31. It would require a 1/2-inch gap hook to reduce hooking mortality on non-target species. It'd be a selective gear rule. This would provide additional opportunity for trout in this area without significant impacts to wild steelhead. 55, close in angling on Hutchison Creek. This is in the Nooksack system, and it would protect juvenile anadromous salmonids. 56 would extend the night closure and anti-snagging rule on Wallace River. It sits in the lower river up to the 363rd Avenue Road. It would be in first Saturday in June through November 30. Currently, that closure is September 16 through November 30. We'd like to extend that earlier in the year to protect Chinook. 57, implement selective gear rules on Canyon Creek. This is a tributary to the Stillaguamish River. This would occur in first Saturday in June through January 31. We're no longer releasing hatchery steelhead in the system. This would reduce hooking mortality on the wild steelhead. 58, Quilcene River in Jefferson County. We have some snorkel surveys that show we have robust numbers of sea-run cutthroat trout that are available for harvest. We propose to implement the trout season or trout regulations, daily limit to minimum size 14 inches, allow some harvest of sea-run cutthroat trout. 59, Clover Creek in Pierce County. This would increase the minimum length to 14 inches and add selective gear rules to provide some protection for salmonid smolts. Getting close to the end here. We're in the coastal region. Number 60, that allow retention of hatchery, trout, that are of any size in our coastal streams. This is basically designed to harvest juveniles that are released from our hatcheries and residualize in the systems to reduce impacts on our wild steelhead populations. 61, requiring release of kokanee and elk and umbrella creeks. These feed into Lake Ozette, and we have concerns about the listed Ozette sockeye, and there's some indication that these kokanee play a role in the sockeye population. This provides some protection and aligns with other tributaries in that system. 62 would convert the Middle Nema Pond and Moses Pond to year-round. This is in Pacific County. We're looking to provide some additional sport fishing opportunity in that system. There's limited trout opportunity in Region 6. Finally, the marine area, number 63. This proposal is to increase the daily harvest limit, or the daily limit for spot shrimp in marine areas 1 through 4 out on our coast. Currently, the daily limit is 80 shrimp, the statewide, consistent with Puget Sound. The proposal here is to increase that to 200 per person. The spot shrimp fishery occurs quite a ways off of our coast, 30 plus miles. This would there's very low use of this fishery, and so this would try to promote some fishery, making it more cost effective for individuals to participate in this fishery.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Jennings.
So would that be a daily quota?
Commissioner Jennings, that's correct.
So, you know, one of the questions we had with Albacore in the past was if they stayed out overnight, a daily limit is hard to understand. So if you're going 30 miles out and you stay overnight, do you get to keep 400?
Commissioner Jennings, we do also have a possession limit for shellfish, and so when you're in the field or in transit, there is a cap on the amount of shellfish, and I believe it's 2 daily limits. So, and I believe it's 1 daily limit, and then additional in a processed form. I can verify that information for you, but currently we have a daily limit and a possession limit that would provide a cap. So theoretically, you could have more than a single daily limit if you were out longer than a one-day trip.
Great. That's what I was hoping, that if we stayed overnight, you could keep 400.
And I'll verify that, Commissioner Jennings. Thank you. 64 is regarding anchovy and sardine daily limit, and also the use of cast net gear in our coastal areas, marine areas 1 through 4, as well as Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor. The interest here is for people to use cast net gear, which we do have defined in rule, to catch anchovy and sardine to use as live bait in their fisheries, say an albacore fishery, for example. This would maintain the daily limit of 10 pounds for herring and smelt species. So the interest here is, in many of these areas, people can't buy live bait, and so this would allow them to catch their own.
The concept's nice. 25 pounds in the aggregate for a daily limit seems awfully high for bait fish, and the same for 10 pounds for herring and smelt. I mean, if we're talking about, well, I would assume we're talking about for live bait use.
That is correct.
So again, 25 pounds of anchovies for your daily use seems pretty darn high. What was the basis for those numbers of 10 and 25 pounds?
Commissioner Jennings, the 10-pound daily limit is our current rule for forage fish, and so the proposal was not to increase daily limit for herring or smelt. However, in the proposal that the agency received, recognition was that they were looking for additional bait that they could have on board. So they have live well tanks, and you may have the capacity to hold more than 10 pounds on board. And so...
Is this for charter boats or for individuals with boats?
This does not differentiate between a charter boat or a personal boat. It would be open to an individual.
I guess I just don't see that many personal boats that would need 25 pounds of anchovies on board their live well. I'll stop. We can talk about it next time, but the number seems awfully high to me.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to respond, David. I have some familiarity with that. These recreational boats that are traveling offshore anywhere from 30 to 70 miles on a daily trip to fish for albacore, these boats probably average about $200,000 in value. They've got 4 to 6 people on board. Like Craig alluded to, they have live wells to keep the anchovies alive. The anchovies have a mortality rate when they're in a live well. You have a certain amount of them die. They're fairly fragile. But when you get into an albacore bite, normally you troll with jigs until you get into an albacore bite. Then you stop and you start throwing bait overboard. And that brings the albacore to the boat, and then you single hook, put it on. So on a good albacore day, you go through a lot of bait, primarily anchovies. And so it's a growing fishery, a huge economic contributor to the coastal communities.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
This next regulation is regarding cabazon, and this would implement a minimum size requirement for cabazon in marine areas 4 through 11 and 13. Currently, marine area 12 is closed to harvest of cabazon. Minimum size being proposed here is 18 inches. We do know cabazon are at low numbers, but appear to be stable numbers. An 18-inch minimum size would allow the majority of cabazon to mature and reproduce prior to being recruited or being available for harvest. Number 66, rockfish species retention in Marine Area 4, west of the Bedilla Tatoosh line. As you may recall, east of Bedilla Tatoosh line, we limit harvest to black and blue rockfish only. This would, west of that line, allow black, blue, and yellowtail rockfish to be retained. The intent of this rule would provide additional protection for non-target rockfish species with the idea of allowing or providing increased numbers of rockfish to move in from the coastal area into Puget Sound. 67 is regarding the tuna daily limit. This proposal would implement a 2-fish daily limit for these species, yellowfin, skipjack, and northern bluefin tuna. This would align the limit with other marine food fish that are not commonly caught in Washington. These species are caught very rarely in our Washington waters. 68 reduces the minimum size in Marine Area 4. Currently, Marine Areas 1 through 3 have a 22-inch minimum size limit. Marine Area 4 has a 24-inch size limit. We know that that 22-inch limit allows a majority of lingcod to spawn prior to being harvested by that size. What this also would do is reduce bycatch of non-target species by allowing people to retain a lingcod sooner. 69, this proposal would reduce lingcod season in Marine Area 4B. It would align it with the rest of Puget Sound. It's currently April 16 through October 13. The season would be from May 1 through June 15, and again align with the remainder of Puget Sound. Those are the proposals that we have before you. Where we are in the process is again, today is simply a briefing of the rule package that's out for public comment. Our deadline on comments on the regulations in writing is January 29. I'll be coming back before you on at the February 8-9 meeting to summarize the major comments that we receive on proposals, as well as that'll be an opportunity for the public to provide testimony. In February, then, staff will meet with the FISH committee regarding the comments that we've received and formulate recommendations that then we'll present to the commission in March for rule action. These regulations will then take effect permanently May 1. So with that, I'd take any additional questions that you have.
Commissioner Jennings.
I have a few, but I'll wait for other people to.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I may have missed it, Craig, but weren't we thinking of a walleye fishery in the upper arm of the Spokane this year in March, April?
So the proposal that we have in our package, if I recall correctly, is there's currently a closure in the Spokane arm during the springtime period for walleye. The proposal that's in our package is through a permanent rulemaking, and if adopted, would take effect in May. And my understanding is that would basically, if adopted, eliminate that walleye closure. Is that what you're referring to, Commissioner Duvia?
Yes, but I was wondering, for this year, it wouldn't happen. It would happen in 2014, would be the first fish season?
Under the permanent rulemaking, that would occur in the following year. Let me go back and take a look at that regulation and make sure I have my facts straight, Commissioner Duvia, and let you know there could potentially be an option for an emergency rule if my memory is correct. But let me make sure on that point.
Yeah, as you probably recall, the Spokane tribe is harvesting that with a pay for their members to catch them. So this has been off limits to us, so it'd be a great opportunity to. And I think greatly appreciated by the walleye people if we could get the opportunity for that this year.
Great, thank you.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, back on rule number 4, and you don't have to go back to it. On the sharks, why aren't dogfish listed? I mean, I think they're a depressed population here in Puget Sound. They don't breed until they're 20. They have 1 to 2 pups when they do. And we know that we've got significant bycatch with gill nets. So why would we not close them as long as we're closing other fish, other sharks? But, I mean, the biology is about the same.
Well, Commissioner Jennings, I can't speak specifically to why dogfish are not included in this particular proposal. I think what we can do is go back, and I would need to refresh my memory with the ground fish presentation that we provided the commission, I believe it was in August of 2010 or 11. Where we did some analysis on the status of dogfish, as well as I think take a look at the actions that have happened since then, closing the dogfish set net and set line fisheries. So effectively, we have no commercial directed harvest at that species, and see if there is additional action that is needed, or should we be evaluating the steps that we've taken to this point before we implement additional rules. So I guess that's a roundabout answer of saying I think we need to take a look at that species and see if the additional protection is warranted. If I recall correctly, staff recommendation at the time was to evaluate that on an annual basis and bring back recommendations to the commission.
So how do you do stock assessments on dogfish?
The analysis that we were proposing or that we've been doing is the vulnerability analysis and the DCAC analysis that we presented back in August, because we don't have stock assessment data for Dogfish, but we also have implemented some bycatch information collecting in our gillnet fishery, and we're proposing to analyze that as well.
Thank you. On rule number 67, bluefin tuna were listed. And I thought we'd had a discussion that I was a little surprised at the last three-year cycle when bluefin tuna showed up, really the last day that we got to consider this and vote on it. And we talked about the fact that the message associated with bluefin tuna being there, and I'm surprised to see the bluefin tuna on this. I thought we were looking to take bluefin tuna off the recreational fishing list of acceptable fish. I thought we had discussions at least the fish committee meeting, if not the commission level.
Commissioner Jennings, my understanding of the direction that we had been pursuing was to remove the exception to the two fish daily limit for those migratory species to only include albacore tuna and mackerel, which results in those fish coming off of that WAC language and then moves into the other food fish definition, which is a two fish daily limit.
We can also take food fish, and if we're concerned about the population status, remove them from the two fish daily limit.
The commission has the flexibility to take that action in this regulation process.
And so that would be a floor amendment at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess one request would be by March to have draft language for a floor amendment to remove bluefin tuna.
Thank you.
When I look at Regulation 69, the main driving force for that is conservation, which is the paramount objective for the establishment and implementation of management objectives for our fisheries resources. When we did a test fishery back in 2011 out at Nia Bay over the summer, July, August, September, the results from the department's test fishery resulted in a very low number of legal-sized lingcod caught, I think 5 legal lings out of the 200 angler days, plus or minus, used, and a very high bycatch rate of rockfish, the order of 35 no-take rockfish for each legal ling landed. That bycatch rate is not congruent with our policies and rockfish population objectives of rebuilding and recovering our very depressed Puget Sound rockfish communities. A significant number of those bifish rockfish encounters occur deeper than 60 feet. Most rockfish suffer significant morbidity, if not mortality, associated with barotrauma when brought up to the surface from these depths. My concern grows when I then consider, particularly for species with high site fidelity, such as tiger rockfish and China rockfish, the increased probability for multiple catch and release encounters, both during a single lingcod season and also across the multiple decades that a tiger or China might be occupying its selected home range. And that home range is in the order of 100 feet from the center. It's a very small home range. They're very site loyal once they establish as adults. When we did our test fishery out there this past summer, well, back in 2001, when scuba surveyors were out there and scuba folks, at Wada Island alone, they encountered underwater 36-plus tiger rockfish. When we did our test fishery this past two summers back, we didn't catch a single tiger rockfish. This morning I talked about the Marble Mulet having a 3.7% annual rate of decline. The rate of decline I think we're seeing for rockfish out at Nia Bay and Area 4B is a lot higher than 3.7% annual mortality based on bycatch from our fisheries. I think in the absence of more detailed data that we may be getting in the future, the daily ling cod limit for Area 4B should also be reduced from 2 ling cod per person per day down to 1 ling cod per person per day, consistent with the rest of Puget Sound, and also consistent with our policies, both our groundfish policy and our rockfish plan that the department has for rebuilding and recovering our Puget Sound rockfish populations. So again, I'm hoping the department can provide me draft motion language to support a floor amendment to reduce the ling cod daily limit for Area 4B to 1 ling cod per person. So I just want to make sure I get the language right. I'm asking for a couple months of help to make sure that when I make that floor amendment, I get it correct. Proposed change 65, implementing a minimum retention size for cabazon, in my opinion, does not go far enough, fast enough, to restore and rebuild our Puget Sound cabazon stocks. The department says that we have a low but stable population. That's not how I interpret the data. When we looked at the data we got a few months back on cabazon from 2003, I think, to 2009, all but one of the years had a negative trend. If you analyze that data from a non-parametric perspective, that's, you know, six negatives and one positive. That's hard for me to say that that's a stable population. When I looked at the comments we've received so far in the department, it seems like that's what the anglers are seeing also. We appear to have a very unbalanced age structure in the cabazon population and a very low residual population density. Based on the current numbers and size of cabazon and Edmonds Underwater Park, which has been closed to fishing for 30-plus years, and other historical density data, cabazon was an abundant resident of Puget Sound. Today, it's almost been fished to extirpation. Not extinction, but extirpation. It is so uncommon in Puget Sound that unless we take serious steps to reverse the decline we're seeing, I'm concerning it population levels so low that the population stock may soon start to suffer from the Ali effect. The Ali effect is when there's so few individuals left of breeding age in the population that willing breeders are unable to locate partners. At that point, even though you have residual individuals left, you don't have an effective breeding population. The test fishery at Nia Bay also exposed a dirty side to the cabazon fishery, rockfish bycatch. For each cabazon landed as part of the 2011 test fishery, 22 no-take rockfish were also taken. 22 rockfish injured or killed for each cabazon, who is also a depressed population, makes no biological sense to me and does not seem to be congruent with our conservation as a paramount objective responsibility we have. As an individual, I believe the best course of action is to rebuild our Puget Sound cabazon stock, is to close the cabazon fishery for the next several years. We did that back in the 90s for ling cod when the numbers got low, and they came back much healthier. And when we opened up the fishery again, we put in the classic management tools of season, links, slots. I don't know how the rest of the other commission feels about Puget Sound cabazon stock. So I will request again the department prepare draft motion language to support a floor amendment to closing the Puget Sound cabazon fishery. I don't know how the rest of the commission feels about the Puget Sound cabazon stock, so should my motion to close the cabazon fishery fail to receive majority support, I will then propose the following amendments. To align the Puget Sound cabazon season length with the Puget Sound ling cod season. Currently, the ling cod season is 6 weeks, and the cabazon season is about 5 months. And yet, when we look at the numbers, we have many more ling cod than we do cabazon. So why we have such a much longer season makes no sense to me. Likewise, I'd like to see the Puget Sound cabazon daily limit taken from 2 to 1. Again, we have ling cod, much more common. We only have a daily limit of 1. We have cabazon, much less common. We have a daily limit of 2 and a much longer season. I request that the department prepare draft motion language to support a floor amendment aligning the Cabazon fishery season with the Puget Sound lingcod season. And I also request that the department prepare draft motion language to support a floor amendment changing the daily limit to one Cabazon per person per day in Puget Sound. The reason I'm saying this now is I'm trying to be as open and transparent about what I think where we should be going so that the public can hear it now, has a chance to respond next month. We can talk about it so that when we discuss it 2 months from now, it's not seen as a surprise. We have made the steps to ensure that the CR 102 has been filed broadly enough to handle all of these motions. At the discussion we had to put the proposals on the table that you saw today, that was a decision to get the conversation started. I'm trying to say where I think the conversation should go by explicitly saying it out loud for the rest of the commissioners and the public to hear. So with that, I'll stop. Thank you very much, and I have given a copy of this to Tammy so you can follow up with my request for draft motion language.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Comments? Good job.